It's spooky time. Spooky time.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Friday Night Frights episode of the Real DMC Podcast. DMC stands for Dave, Marks, and Colin. We're all here today. What's up, guys? You want to go do a little home invasion robbery?
Not anymore.
No?
Not really.
I think I want to do it on a more populated street or something.
Like the wrong house.
Seriously.
Well, speaking of that, the film we are here to discuss today was written and directed by Feta Alvarez. It is 2016's Don't Breathe.
You're leaving?
Yeah, as soon as I have the money.
When are you coming back?
Never.
Yo, I got our ticket out of here. Rumor is this guy is sitting on at least 300K. Boom!
That's your guy.
Wait, is he blind?
You messed up to rob a blind guy, isn't it?
Just because he's blind don't mean he's insane, bro.
Well, let's see. So, as I mentioned, the film was written by Fede Alvarez, and it's also written by Rodo C. Yates. And Rodo C. Yates is actually directing a sequel to this film that comes out in August.
Oh, nice.
And the name of the movie is called Don't Breathe Sequel. That's the actual working title of the movie right now.
So I'm glad you mentioned that, because I saw that too. Apparently, Sam Raimi, who's the producer of this film, and I think maybe the sequel as well, I'm not sure. But he commented on the sequel. He said, "It's only the greatest idea for a sequel I've ever heard. I'm not kidding."
Oh, wow.
I'm excited.
I'm super curious.
Yeah. The only thing I was disappointed with was knowing that there was a sequel, and I did read the synopsis of the sequel. It did give away... It just said like...
Oh, I think I did too on IMDb. It was
like, the blind man comes back or something like that. Or so I knew he didn't die in the end. That was the only kind of drawback I had, knowing that beforehand.
Speaking of which, we are definitely going to go into spoilers. So we're going to talk about the movie openly.
I think we've already spoiled it, Dave.
Yeah. So that's a little late because Marcus just gave away the ending. But
I did not
on
give
the
away
chance,
the ending. The okay. fact that there's a sequel gives away
that's
the
true.
Ending. So if
okay,
you,
that's fair. Yeah. That's fair. But this is a movie that definitely probably is most effective the very first time you watch it. So, and it's one of those movies that it's fun because it has twists and turns. So if you haven't seen it yet, I think we're all probably going to end up recommending it. So why don't you check it out before you listen to this podcast?
Yeah, there is one, and we'll get to it, that just completely did not expect coming at all.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to jump to that because I'm super curious about your, because it was the first time for you guys to go through this, but... Before that, just some general background on the film. It was definitely a huge success. So for the year 2016, it came in at number 33, right behind Ride Along 2, and in front of Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children. By the way, the next movie down was The Accountant. Just a side note. Do you guys ever see The Accountant?
Oh, yeah. That was really good.
I liked
that was
it.
A really good movie. Actually, yeah. I like that movie. We might want to watch that one at some point.
Underrated.
So the Don't Breathe actually was a big hit on the festival circuit. So when it first came out before wide release, there was a lot of buzz that was being generated about it. It ended up making about $157 million globally, and the budget was only $9.9 million. So it was definitely a huge hit for Sony. And it maintains a 7.1 on the IMDb, so it's definitely... pretty highly regarded. It's funny because I actually don't hear people talk about this movie.
I had never heard of it. Until,
you never heard of it?
Not until we did Evil Dead.
And, yeah, I was the same. Totally flew by me.
Let's go let's go through the cast really quick. So not a huge cast. There are basically four people in this with a couple extras, and then there's a dog. There's your entire cast. But
the dog was played by three different dog actors.
Yeah.
Yes, actually, I have that. I believe it was Athos, Astor, and Nomad all participated as dog actors in this film.
Nomad was my favorite.
You thought Nomad really carried it?
Yeah, he really brought the snarl.
He embraced the material.
I don't know. I think Astor had a lot more like a doggy snot and spit. You know, they brought him in just specifically for the car scenes.
I wonder if they did have like different roles for the dogs. Like this one's like really good for drool.
We need some slobber on the window. So, all right. Well, moving past the dogs. So,
and we're done. We're done with the cast. Let's move on.
So, can start with Stephen Lang. So, Stephen Lang plays the blind man, as he's credited in the movie. And he's just awesome in this movie. I mean, he has just this incredible presence. And Stephen Lang, definitely a well-known character actor, and probably beyond that, right? I mean, I would say... When you see Stephen Lang, what's the movie that jumps to your mind?
I'd probably say Avatar because I think that's his largest role. But like you also recognize him from in Tombstone. I didn't recognize him from Manhunter, which he's also part of.
So for me, this is the one that I was just like, whoa, because I totally forgot. So he plays Freddie Lowndes, right? The Tatler reporter, the sleazy reporter in Manhunter.
Oh, okay, and he
looks nothing like himself, like that old version of himself. He's got like red hair and he's like clean shaven. Like I struggle sometimes to like put these two people together, and that's the same person.
Yeah, maybe that's why I didn't recognize him. I guess that was 35 totally. Years ago.
Oh, it's funny because even when you say that, thinking about Manhunter, I know that movie fairly well. I can't picture it.
I know.
I need to go back and check that out.
Yeah, I know. It's so odd, but yeah, for me, it's like it's Avatar.
I think it's he's playing a little bit of his Avatar character here. It's like his Avatar character retired and ended up moving into
good call
moving to this house after he's blinded because this guy's a tough son of a bitch, for sure.
For sure.
Well, he does, you know, facial scarring very well.
Yeah.
He did win the Best Supporting Actor Award from Fangoria Magazine.
Yeah, I really like what he does here. I mean, first of all, he looks great. Like, you know, he's got these grenade frag scars on his face, and his eyes are like this cloudy white because he's blind. So he sort of looks like an old weathered albino gorilla.
Yeah, well, you know what I was going for was Old Man Logan.
Yeah.
Old Man Logan, that's good. That's really good.
I think actually, I mean, looking at this, I bet he would have made a pretty interesting Wolverine.
Oh my God, yes.
He pulls off the old man, and of course, at one point he does actually, sure. He uses his senses to smell shoes, so that probably just reinforced my my thinking that he could be Wolverine. But I think he's great in this movie.
But then that was the thing. It was like, so aside from how awesome he looked, the way that he developed, you know, like sort of these acting tics to portray someone who's blind, you know, the sort of movements like with his head where he was like, he often was very still, but then he would like he smelled something or he heard something. And then all of a sudden he would be like in motion.
He's a predator. Like,
but Yeah. So really, really, really well done.
Yeah, I really like the character too is just superb. Like it really made it into it was almost a monster movie, right? You have this like creature inside this house. It can't see. So you have to like move around quietly. And it made it very much like almost like a monster movie in a certain sense.
So if you sort of like took the like A Quiet Place and crossed it with Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, like an actual human. Like,
Because I definitely, once they get into the basement, I'm getting a big James Gunn vibe.
And even when he talks for the first time, there's a little bit of like there's a little bit of the Buffalo Bill in that voice too.
Totally.
The way that the way that he's modulating his voice, it's really effective, and it kind of gives you like, ooh, whoa, this guy is like, there's something definitely off here.
Yeah.
I mean, how long is he on screen? Like half hour, 45 minutes before he even talks the first time, which is really, I thought it was quite effective. Like the whole thing was great.
Well, so like the first scene where you see him, and I think this is like really good. And Money is, he's going to put the little sleep bomb, right?
Yeah.
He's laying in bed with his back to Money. And then Money like sort of like focuses on the sleep bomb. And then he like looks up and all of a sudden he's like straight up sitting up in bed looking right at Money. And it's just like, oh, holy shit. It's like really, really creepy. And he's like, what was there?
Yeah, there's a little there's a little bit of Michael Myers here too, honestly.
In terms of
the lurking, the appearance, the stillness. I mean, all the stuff that kind of triggers some of those callbacks to Halloween when you're thinking about what is it that makes Michael Myers effective. There's definitely some of that here.
There's a couple of great shots where, you know, they're like looking or they're like talking, and then all of a sudden they turn around and boom, he's like right there. They didn't even hear him.
Right.
And he's like right there and he's just perfectly still. And they're like, oh shit, really nicely done.
By the way, and also he's ripped. So good job, Stephen Lang, for getting into shape. Yeah. Because,
how old is he? He looks way better than me.
Badass.
Wait, let me check. 52?
He's 52?
Yeah.
So well, you're saying
he's born in 52. He's born in 52. So he's 69.
Wow. Wait, he's 69? Looks like that? Jesus, I'm not doing well for myself. 70. I got to get on the grind.
Seriously. Oh, he has a definite, like, like the Michael Myers is a good comparison because he has the same kind of unrelenting, like, unstoppable force.
Yeah, he's a fucking Terminator.
Yeah.
He's absolutely the Terminator in this movie. All right. Well, we'll talk about more about him as we go, I think. So Jane Levy as Rocky.
She's great. I really like her in horror films. I hope she keeps doing more. I don't know if she's going to switch. She's doing the sitcom now on NBC, and she's good in that too. I really like her as an actress. I liked her in Evil Dead, and I think she does a great job with this one. Like, showing of terror, and just like, she has great, like, eye terror emotion. Like, she gets a lot out, and just, I really enjoyed her in this one.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great performance. It's kind of fun as the movie is, you know, toying with your emotions or perspective in terms of, you know, who it is that you should be rooting for. And so, you know, she kind of maintains a space that where she's you know, gets bounced around a little bit. But some of the stuff that she does in terms of, like, the initial reaction when Money gets shot and hiding in the closet it's so great. It's like, she's, yeah, you know, you're really buying the terror and buying that she's, you know, she knows that she's in over her head. And she's also very, you know, she's resourceful and fierce too. So all that comes across as she's a good character here.
I don't have much to say about Jane Levy because I talked about her during our Evil Dead podcast, but I'm a huge fan, and she totally delivered in this as well. So I'll watch whatever she's doing.
Yeah, I hope her and Fetty still work together in the future too. I don't know.
Yeah, me too. I think they're a really good combination.
For sure.
Oh yeah, great pairing. And then so the two guys, so Dylan Minnette plays Alex and Daniel Zavato plays Money. I think one problem with the guys is that there's not a lot of motivation or setup for them. I mean, you don't necessarily need it. I don't think it's a big detractor from the movie, but you know, they kind of mess with the perspective on both those guys, right? I mean, so Alex comes from what appears to be a relatively stable home. His dad has a good job. The house is nice, but he's doing these break-ins. You don't really know why. You kind of wonder if it's just he's trying to impress Rocky.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he fell in love with the wrong girl. He's crushing on the wrong lady and getting.
Yeah, so it's kind of. I mean, the motivation there is a little weak to become, like, to do multi. You know, but all these burglaries.
I think he covers it though because he's always calculating the risk, right? He's saying, "Oh, we can't steal cash greater than $10K. We can't."
Right.
Like, why'd you bring a gun? Do you know what that puts us into? Like, he's really thoughtful in what they're stealing and how he's doing it.
He's the which is the exact opposite of Money.
Yeah,
but you're right. You know, like he's like, well. Like, if I'm going to do this for this girl,
I'll do petty crime. That's fine.
Yeah. I'm going to make sure that, like, it's the lowest risk that we can while still, you know, he's basically is the person who's providing them with houses and a way to get in easily and not get caught.
Much, much bigger risk that he's taking than those other two, honestly.
Oh, yeah, sure. he's hedging by doing a lot of smart things. And then things go wrong.
Yeah. And then the Money character is interesting. The one thing that I do like about that is they sort of set him up as this, you know, typical, you know, kind of bully, gruff dude. But then when they get to the house, he set up a motion or a time-lapse camera to case the house. And so they kind of give him like, oh, this guy's actually, he might be better at this than you think, right? Or there's some, you know, some intelligence there versus just being kind of the gruff bad guy.
Yeah. I don't know.
Minimal.
I don't know how smart he is, considering he sprayed all his DNA all over the bathroom floor of the previous house that they robbed.
Oh yeah, well, I'm not saying he's a Rhodes Scholar. I'm just saying that there are a couple actions that he takes that are surprising.
All right, and have these guys heard of bolt cutters? I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, so let's just start. I'm curious because this is the second time I'd seen this movie, so I knew what twists were going to show up. So I got to watch it in a slightly different way. But I'm curious about, as you guys were watching this, in terms of your, you know, who were you sympathizing with, and like how and when did it turn? I mean, I'm curious.
You know, it's tough because I always feel like with movies like this, they always set you up to, you know, root for the protagonist, even when the protagonist is doing like something, they're a criminal, right? And they're
right.
I don't know. I see. So I think I had a certain idea of what the movie was going to be.
Yeah, even the synopsis kind of gives it away, right? Like, you know, this guy is not going to be.
Yeah, but I don't know, like, who I was like really, whose side I was on, until later, and then I was like, oh shit, okay, now I know whose side I'm on.
I would say even with like I thought. money was kind of a dirt bag.
Oh, totally. Yeah, 100%.
Alex seemed like a good kid, just mixed up in the wrong group at the moment. And I think Rocky was doing it with the right intentions in mind.
Right.
And they show her family life at one point, and you can see it's like, it's a terrible home life, and she's just trying to do it for her little sister and get her out of there. So I think you, I mean, I ended up siding with Rocky pretty quick. And even like the robberies they were doing, it wasn't, they weren't doing anything. Yes, it was illegal, but it wasn't like, they're not hurting anyone. It's not, it wasn't violent crime or anything like that that they're portraying. So it wasn't that hard to like still be on her side.
Well, how about this? So we can jump to it again. Spoilers, everybody, but what did you think when they went down to the basement? Oh, like, what was your reaction to that twist?
I was so surprised. I did not expect. So they go down into the basement. You're like, okay, they're going to try and find a way out. It was just like two of them at that point. And then the other girl who's tied up, like locked up in the basement, comes screaming out of them. It's a great scare because you didn't expect another person in the movie. And just you're like, what? Who is this? And then like she's chained up into this like padded room. And you're just like, what the hell is going on? This guy is more fucked up than I even thought. Like it was a great twist. You did not expect that at all.
Yeah. How about you, Colin?
I was not expecting that at all. I didn't think that he was just some like totally innocent guy and he was going to go all like Rambo on them because he was like, you know, former special forces or something like that. Because the house itself was, it was creepy, at least on the inside.
I thought also they did telegraph. I even wrote down in the notes. I'm like, why is he locked? Why does he have so many internal locks?
Right.
Like I was questioning it myself a little bit. I'm like, oh, this seems kind of weird. Maybe they're just doing it for mechanisms that they have to like break into this room or they have to do something else. So there was a little bit of like, I think they did a really good job with foreshadowing across the movie, the way they like did camera work and zooming.
Yeah, because you just
so much.
Yeah, you didn't really think about it, but you're like,
there was something there. They expect that.
No.
So Colin, I'm curious, like, what did you, because Marcus gave a little bit of his perspective, but when that twist happened, like, what were you thinking at that point?
Well, so when they went down into the basement, I started thinking, but I actually did think like, oh, wow, this guy's just because of the basement itself. And like, there was so much stuff and it was a little weird. And I was going like, what does he do down there?
Right.
And then, yeah, when you see this well-lit padded cell and this girl who's like all tied up and stuff. Yeah. I was like, what the hell? Yeah. No, my mind was reeling.
Yeah.
It was great. It was like a really great curveball.
It's a fun twist. It's like, that's when I knew we were going to watch this, I was excited for you guys to experience it.
Well, plus they set it up too, cause they show like, cause she was attached to a bell and that went upstairs also. And they showed like the bell ring. They showed the bell earlier. You're like, oh, what's that bell? Like, oh, he's blind, so maybe he rings it for someone to help him. There's a couple, like, various different points throughout the movie. I think they did a really good job of, like, when they first came into the house, of zooming around and showing different things. They showed the hammer on the wall. They showed his gun under the bed. They showed, like, the closets and all these different things that you knew were going to come back in the movie. So I thought that was really, like, and it wasn't, like, telegraphing it because he didn't. But it's just showing you the different pieces, like showed you the locked room and showed you these different things. I thought it was really, really well done.
But I'm also I'm thinking like, oh, well, okay. So he's blind. He lives on his own in a very bad neighborhood. If someone were to try to break in, there's no one around. So like he's got, you know, the guns for protection and yeah, he is blind. So some of these things make sense. But then when they were in the basement, like right before we find Cindy, the girl who's, you know, who's kidnapped and is holding hostage, there was a shot. It was actually from her perspective, from her little padded room. And there was like a chair facing you. And I was thinking, why does he have that chair there? Like, what is he like? What is he doing there? Like, why? Like, what is that? And then it turns out like
he's got a vial to fill. We can get to that.
Okay, well, actually, can we talk a little about the photography? Because I actually think the photography in this movie is pretty fantastic. So the cinematographer is Pedro Luque. I think the opening shot of this movie is fantastic, like where it's, you know, you're coming down from, I don't know if it's a drone shot or whatever, but where he's dragging the body up the street. I do have a question about where she was bleeding from, by the way, because that's an awful lot of blood to be losing when you're getting dragged down the street. But
it was just for effect.
But I think the opening shot is great. And then Colin mentioned this, or Marcus did, in terms of going through the house. But I just think, I think the photography in this movie is fantastic. And I think it really, it does a lot to create an environment that is, very compelling. So you're in the space with them, and so that's I think one of the things that's kind of cool is it sort of defines the reality and then sets up, okay, you know, here's the box that you're in, here's your claustrophobia, and of course there's other stuff in terms of just the lighting inside the house, so the upstairs, the fact that it's all, you know, it's pretty grimy looking and it's, you know, it's relatively unpleasant. And then I actually think it's very interesting when you go down to the basement where he has the woman, you know, chained up, because all of a sudden it looks very clean and bright and there's some plants down there. So it sort of throws you because it's a little bit of the opposite from what you'd normally expect for your killer's basement, right? Where the basement's usually the worst part of the house.
He was growing some hydroponics. He just had.
Well, so I was sort of thinking lights. That because you see these plants and like, I was like, what is he doing down here?
Right.
Yeah. It helps with his eyes.
I like the fact that it lingers on the action rather than doing all these quick cuts between the character perspectives when the fighting is happening. So you see this, in fact, I think it makes the violence in this movie that much more effective. Like when you have the overhead shot and he has, you know, at one point the blind man has Alex and he's just like punching him in the face. It's like, wow, that's like really, it's very impactful. And, you know, I like the longer shots. Worked for me.
Yeah, I totally agree. I thought the photography was superb.
Yeah, I don't know what they did in the basement when he shut out the lights, but the particular
super cool
camera effect to show it. So instead of like using some sort of like night vision to see what's going on, it's very dark, but you can still see the outlines of things in their faces. So it's very like, very, very dark gray, but you can still see what's going on. And that was really, really effective, especially when I think Alex turned around or Rocky turned around and his face is like right there.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's so creepy looking.
I thought the other one that was really good when she was reaching out and she almost grabbed him by accident. Like she's like reaching out
in the dark. Fires the gun. Yeah.
Marcus mentioned this, but I also do think that the exposition and the way that the exposition is kind of laid out in this movie, some of these things there are a few elements that are relatively convenient, like him shooting the phone and like, you know, hits her phone with the bullets so she can't use her phone anymore. And the other character has his phone. He loses the charge on it. His phone runs out of juice. So that's a little bit of a, you know, that's a mistake from a rookie move from somebody who's going to do some home invasion. You want to charge your phone, I think, before you're going to go through that.
You also want to put it on like silent mode.
He did do that at the beginning. He did get a text. I thought, like, he was in the bathroom, right? Alex was in the bathroom right after they got locked in. And she texted him, like, where are you? Are you safe? Or, like, he shot money.
And then that was good because it was, you can't yell. You can't say anything.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Alex is outside.
But he had come in before and he, like,
poor,
he
got trapped. Poor Alex, I have to say. Poor Alex. He's the one guy with a conscience. He doesn't want to do this. You know, it's too risky. First of all.
Yeah. Like, and as soon as he brings out the gun, he's like, I'm out.
Yeah.
Like, you got a gun here. Like, I'm done. Like, this is not what I'm signed up
for. And then, you know.
I'm just trying to impress this girl. She's cute. Kind of crushing on her. I'll do some petty theft.
By the way, money's logic of the fact that, maybe he used the chloroform or maybe it was working or not. But to fire a gun inside the house in terms of noise, like that's to open a lock, that seems like a pretty bad move.
It's an awful move. But I do.
Also, I'm not sure what like, was it chloroform is what he mixed up? Or, like, did they explain that? Or is just, like,
I think it was supposed to be something like chloroform, because he called it like, a chlorobomb or something.
If the guy's named Money, I'm not sure I'm trusting his chemical abilities there.
Well, I agree with you 100%, because apparently it worked for shit.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that guy's knocked out. He's not waking for hours. He's, like, 1 minute later.
By the way, Money... I had no problems when the blind man killed Money. I was like, he deserved it.
He expected it.
Oh yeah, there was no. I mean, he was never set up as a particularly sympathetic character at all.
No, he's a total.
He wasn't that bad. So I was glad that he wasn't like too over the top. He wasn't like, because they could have gone like a little too deep with him. He could have been like abusing Rocky or something, or being like in it for like.
Yeah,
he could have just shot the guy or something like that. Like, so he wasn't too violent of a person.
Yeah, I had the same thought, actually.
He was just a total asshole, a total dick.
Yeah.
I mean, like, just from
the... He was, like, partial. He was, like, 70%.
Just from the get-go, like, when they robbed the first house.
Okay, he is.
He's like, walking through there. First of all, they're supposed to be, like, in and out, finding, like, specific items. What's he doing? Yeah. He's, like, knocking vases off and breaking them. And, like, it's just, like, what a total douchebag, right?
Right, but you know what's great about that is I think that's another example of where they do the exposition really well. Right?
Yeah, because
that opening robbery is like 2 minutes, and you have a good sense of who each of these characters are, like the actions they take in the like you mentioned, like money, like peeing on the floor of the house, right? So stupid,
I
right?
I don't think he was peeing.
Was he not? Oh, sorry, did I miss that?
Yeah, you did.
Pretty sure he was jizzing everywhere.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Okay, sorry, I missed that one. I think the other thing, just in general, the premise and the misdirection in this movie is tons of fun. There's so many times like you think it's going one direction, and then something else happens. It knocks you slightly off balance. And there are big examples of this and small examples, right? So the big example is obviously, the blind guy has people chained up in the basement. So that's a pretty big surprise, pretty big twist. But there's also a bunch of little things, like when the blind man stabs what you think is Alex with the gardening shears. Like I actually, hadn't seen this in a while. Like I thought Alex really got stabbed there. I was kind of thrown for a second.
Yeah, I was wondering. I was thinking like he can't be dead, right? We would have seen his face or something. But I was like, I don't know what that would have been. Was it like a backpack or something that he was wearing? I completely forgot about the second body, which we need to talk about later.
Well, let's talk about it now.
Who was that?
It was money. I thought that was money's body.
No. That was like some, was it money?
I thought it was money's body.
I thought that, so maybe it's money. I have to go back and look, but I thought he put a bag over money's head and dragged him somewhere. I didn't think it was the utility room. I thought that was like somebody else's body. Maybe it was, it had to have been money.
It had to be money's body, but
it had to have been money. Okay.
Process of elimination.
All right. Then now it makes a lot more sense.
But that was a good example of where like I'm like, oh, Alex died, right? I thought he got stabbed with the shears. And then there's all these little things like when he falls onto the skylight, right?
And that was so good.
And he's laying like there.
They
and
shot
it,
at that.
It's a great effect. And it's sort of a great concept where, the grass or the glasses slowly cracking.
Yeah.
And then you think that it's either going to break and he's going to fall through, or maybe he's going to get off. But then no, the guy just ends up shooting, the blind man ends up shooting out the skylight and he falls through it. So,
and that was totally a good shot because Alex is like, he suddenly like comes to and he looks up and boom, there he is pointing a gun and he shoots and he somehow misses him, hits the skylight and he goes crashing through. Really, that was a really, really good shot.
Yeah, that whole sequence was really good. Like when he falls onto it and then you just see the glass slowly cracking. Like,
though I did have one question about that. Because Alex was in the daughter's bedroom, right?
Yeah.
And then so Rocky goes, she crawls into the air duct. And then somehow the dog gets in and then jumps on Alex. Alex falls out of the window backwards and then onto the skylight. And I kept wondering, well,
didn't they have bars
if
on
there
the
weren't,
window?
If there were bars on the window, or if that window didn't have bars, then why didn't they just crawl out that window and get out?
Yeah.
Whatever. I went with it.
Well, another one that I had forgotten about is, Alex, right? So Alex heroically comes back after he was not impaled with the gardening shears, and you think he's going to get away, and then blam, just gets shot before he gets out the door.
Yeah.
So that was a good, like, that one caught me off guard.
Something else that caught me off guard was when they're trying to escape with Cindy from the basement, and then they get the lock off and they open up the basement door, and he's standing there outside. So he'd gone outside,
right?
And then he just like fires, and he ends up hitting and killing Cindy.
Poor Cindy.
I know. Like, she was like so
moments
close,
of freedom
right?
was like 1 minute of freedom, like face shot,
so close, right? And then he goes down there, and then he finds the body. And then he realizes it's Cindy, and he's like, he's just so like distraught. He's like wailing, and I'm like, why is he so upset about this? Like that was unexpected, and then you find out later why that was.
And that's I thought the same thing too. I'm like, oh, did he think of her as his daughter then? Like he like
right.
used it, like is he mentally deranged? He like used her as a replacement daughter or something? Or
that's what I was thinking too. Like, oh, you stole my daughter away from me, so now you're going to become my daughter. And then he's just like a complete nut job. But then you find out it's almost a little more. I don't know. Is it better or worse? Like, because he's obviously thought this out like very.
I think it's
logically.
Better because it's not as mentally deranged. It's not like he's not like.
See, I think it's worse because of that.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's a little both, right? He's not like Leatherface or something like deranged and like he doesn't have touch with reality. he's just deranged in a
different way. To explain what's going on, he impregnated Cindy so that she could then give him the child that she took away from him. That is some like cold shit right there.
Yeah.
And he also mentions that after 9 months, he was going to let her go. Come on. He's never going to let her go. No.
No. I mean, what's going to happen? Like, okay, bye. Don't tell anyone.
Well, can we talk about the, I guess, probably the biggest logic problem then with this movie is how does a blind man end up capturing the woman who ran down his daughter and tie her up in the basement?
Tinder?
It didn't bother me. I just figured, like, he did it somehow. He's resourceful.
He just figured he did it somehow.
I don't know. Like, I didn't find as a big gap.
I think it's probably the biggest gap, actually. I mean,
I never even thought about it.
Yeah, I never considered it.
All right.
You know what I liked about this movie? I liked that they set it in Detroit.
And then filmed it in Uruguay.
Well, Hungary, but at least on the outside.
Hungary. Yeah. Hungary.
Yeah. Hungary.
There's a G in there somewhere.
There's a G and a Y and an R. What is it? South America or Europe?
It was a very effective, I thought, for... Like, you didn't have to go into a cabin in the woods, be isolated. You didn't have to be trapped in, like, some weird setup or something like that. It's, like, very urban setting of sorts.
Well, that's what I liked about it. So, of course, I thought about later when I realized, you know, Sam Raimi was the producer. Like, oh, Detroit, of course. But the idea, and I think we saw this also in It Follows, which was also in Detroit. The idea of using these abandoned neighborhoods is just, I think it's a great place to make really fun movies, specifically, you know, like horror movies. Like, imagine you're fleeing from a slasher, right? Or there's like zombies, right? And you're in this type of neighborhood, right? Or there's like, you know, like supernatural elements, because it's so creepy. There's like all these houses are completely abandoned and run down and it's desolate. There's no one around. I'm thinking like, you know, being terrorized by a violent gang of huntsman spiders.
I think it's
a great setting. It's a great setting.
Yeah, I totally agree. Like, just even going into that neighborhood would be scary alone. Like,
no, I wouldn't want to do it. Yeah.
No. Like, and going into that neighborhood at night, you're like, oh, fuck this. Like, I wouldn't, like, and that's not even any setup or anything else. You can just know that, like, okay, this would be completely scary. There's no street lights. There's no police.
Yeah. I do like the fact that he, you know, he really keeps up his house. It was actually the one house that looked normal. I read that Fede Alvarez, he called the movie an exercise in reversal. He said the film deliberately subverts tropes. Like the fact that the house in question is, it's a nice house on a scary street instead of a scary house on a nice street, which I thought was really, really interesting. And that's also smart. The movie is a home invasion story told from the point of view of the home of the invaders. So really interesting setup, really thoughtful, I thought.
Yeah. And also apparently he wanted to make this movie specifically without having it be over the top with gore or blood, because some of the feedback he got after his Evil Dead remake was that was slightly over the top. And so he said he wanted to make this movie without supernatural elements, without it being, you know, too much blood, too extreme. I do think that he definitely is somebody that was a director who he likes to put his characters through the crucible. And between this and Evil Dead, I mean, there's a lot of physical damage that his characters are taking. And it's pretty, you know, pretty relentless. Yeah, Fede Alvarez is definitely appointment director. Filmmaking.
Yeah, definitely.
Film watching.
I really like him.
That was the whole reason I didn't, because my wife does like Jane Levy. And so I'm like, oh, I think you might like this one. I was reading the synopsis. I'm like, I don't know. I was thinking of Evil Dead. I'm like, oh, the gore factor in Evil Dead. I'm like, oh, because she doesn't like gore at all. I'm like, maybe I'll have to watch it first just to make sure. And I think she would have liked it. I think that there's not, like, I don't know if we want to get to the gore right now, but there's almost no gore at all.
Well, I'll tell you something. So Jess and me tapped out about 2/3 of the way through.
Really?
Yeah, like, when we got down to the basement, she's like, I'm just going to go to bed. She's like, this movie is relentlessly unpleasant, is what she said.
Oh, I didn't think it was that bad. I think I was thinking the turkey baster part was probably the worst. That's the part where you're like, okay, this is a little bit disturbing.
I think I think we are just completely jaded. We're just like, we're so...
We watch too many of these things now.
I mean, Dave, you know, like a woman cuts off her own arm in Evil Dead and you're laughing. So
I'm laughing.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I'm cringing, but, you know, I still loved it.
Actually, I honestly, the more that I think about it as time has gone on, I have an even greater appreciation for his remake of Evil Dead. Like at some point, I'm going to have to rewatch it just because... You know, particularly the ending when it's just so over the top. It's just tons of fun.
I bought the 2-pack on Fandango. So I got both Don't Breathe and Evil Dead for $20.
Oh, yeah, that's good. So something else I think really works with this movie is the scares, like the jump scares or the jolts, at least. I think that there are, you know, a handful of them definitely got me. Like when they're out just casing the house the very first time and all of a sudden a dog, like the dog, you know, jumps on the side of the car. That was a good one. By the way, Colin, just hilariously, the Ghost House Productions in the beginning got me. So
it got me again, too.
I did jump when that happened. And then there are a couple of cool moments. Like I think it's where she might be up in the vent, and all of a sudden his hand just like reaches up and grabs her, you know, and pulls her down. And the jump scares and the jolts in this are really effective. I think they're done really well.
So I love the air duct part because Jane Levy got to she got to go all John McClane and have her Die Hard moment. But I was not expecting a mad dog attacked inside an air duct. I've never seen that before.
I know, the dog crawling through is like, oh my God.
That dog is relentless.
Yeah, the dog is just on it.
I think overall the tension, I thought that was like super well done. I thought quietness, they use silence really, really effectively throughout the movie as they're going through the house and like just the sound and all of it, I thought worked quite well. I don't know if this was one of the scariest movies we've seen, but it definitely was up there with racking up the tension, just the feeling of what's going to happen next. And it was just, I thought it was really effective.
Yeah. I think the overall pacing on this movie is great. Yeah. Because it has moments of, you know, sort of fast and then everybody's standing still because they're trying to avoid the guy and all that. So yeah. I think what you're saying is even though it has these moments of silence, the tension, it still feels very, very tight as a movie. And I think it's 89 minutes total, I think. So it definitely, it flies along. So you're definitely engaged the entire time.
Yeah, there's one scene where I think Alex is in like the hallway and he just quietly moves to the side and then the guy comes rushing by. Yeah, it's just like, ooh, it's like so close. Like, you can just kind of feel yourself in that situation, be like, oh man, that'd be so hard to just like, or you're like, she was trapped in the closet. And like, I mean, the name, like the title was kind of like at the beginning, you're like, yeah, it's kind of a lame title for a movie. But then while you're in it, you're like, oh, Don't Breathe. You're like, you totally get it.
You're like, yeah, right, you know, like, yeah. Because you're in that situation and your heart is pounding and you're just trying to control your breathing. At the same time, you're trying to be so silent.
Oh, exactly. Oh man. Like
gotta be just dying there you're just gonna end up like hyperventilating.
And that's why I thought Jane Levy did such a great job, like showing that kind of that scene when she's in the closet. I thought she did like such a good job with that, like just through just using her eyes and just like kind of the terror and just kind of anguish she was in there was so good.
Well, I was gonna say it, you know, any what didn't work or what issues you think you had with the movie?
Somewhat about the premise of hey, this, you know, this guy has all this money in his house.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking, like, unless you have some inside information that you know that this guy actually has money in his house, why would you think that just because he got like a, you know, a six-figure settlement from some family, that he's got all this cash in his house? Like most people, that shit goes right into their bank account. Like that doesn't make any sense to me.
Collecting 5%.
Yeah, I don't think, I mean, I would agree with that. There's really no reason why he would have cash unless, of course, they know him to be somebody who is, you know, anti-bank or whatever, wants to live off the grid, whatever, you know, but.
Yeah, I think they tried explaining it, but I think they didn't, it wasn't quite as kind of buttoned up, just that one aspect.
Yeah,
but.
Which is why I started thinking when I wasn't sure whose body that was behind the washing machine. That's when I was thinking like, oh, maybe Raul has a lot more information. Like he's been casing this. He's got inside info. He sent people in and they haven't come back. Mm. And they're dumb criminals. And they're, you know, that's about it.
Yeah.
They just think like, oh, if, you know, you got like a few $100,000, you obviously would keep that in your house because that's what I would do. But like, I think normal people actually have bank accounts.
Yeah.
I thought it was interesting though, because he could have they left it open, like maybe he doesn't have the money there. So like maybe they didn't break into this house and then the money's not there at all. So I thought it was okay. But yeah, I don't know if there was enough of a premise to say like, okay, we'll break into this one house. But she was desperate enough. She needed the money and she really wanted to get out of there. So
yeah, I mean, her desperation did seem. I thought that was good motivation, like the writing there. But yeah, just the promise of, well, maybe what if he really does have this money? But man, talk about risk. You know, like you don't know if it's there. You don't know where it is. This is a big house. The guy is there and he's not leaving.
Yeah, but they were thinking like, hey, it's this old guy. He's a like blind old guy.
With a Rottweiler.
But like this is going to be easy. Like they thought, you know, like it wasn't. They've drugged the dog and the dog was asleep. They're going to put him to sleep
and
search the house.
I feel like
there's nobody in the neighborhood. They even thought, like, because they said at the beginning, they thought it was going to be this like super simple job. There's no cops patrolling. And they're doing like houses in like nice neighborhoods with like police officers and everything patrolling. So, like, to them, it was very like, this is a very straightforward, cut and dry. If it's not there, whatever, no risk.
I don't know. Just the fact that someone is there, that's all the risk you need. It's just too much.
Dude, yeah, terrifying that would be, like, being in someone else's house with them homing and trying to avoid
them. Yeah, no.
Just that would be like, oh, man. I like it because it is kind of a heist film. They don't have the, like, setup and, like, the, you know, these the planning.
The Ocean's 11, they're not going to bring in the safecracker.
Yeah, but it is a bit of a heist film in the one last job. Like, oh, we just need this one last job.
I'm
off to California.
I did have one question, though. And maybe I'm just forgetting how this happened. But, yeah, they got out of the basement and then... But he's still down there. I think they like maybe knocked him out temporarily and they get out of the basement. They shove the crowbar under the door to jam it. But then the dog is there. Yeah. And now they have to evade the dog. How did the dog get into the house?
Dog door.
Okay, that's a big dog. If there was a dog door, then you'd probably climb out the dog door.
My obvious point is that if the dog got into the house, then they can get out of the house.
Right.
Yeah. And I feel like it was something that, because the blind man was, he went outside.
Yeah, he went out pretty quickly,
and too. And so, like, was there an open door? But then what happened to that open door? Like, how did it get closed again? I don't remember. Do you guys?
No, I think there could have been, like, another side door or something like that. Maybe it does actually have a dog door, and they just never found it, too. Like, I mean, it'd be hard to know, like, the ins and outs of the house in the dark. You have to discover all that.
I feel like there's something that told us how the dog got back in, and then maybe before they were able to find that opening, then he came up and then locked the door again.
Yeah, he did do that too. But it does seem like plausibly, it does feel like you should be able to get out of a house a little bit easier.
Well, this is another question I have.
Can't you detach the bars from the inside of the window? Aren't
that's
they
what I'm saying.
For that? So, like, for fire safety? I mean, I think that's how they work. Yes,
that's absolutely, that was what I was about to say. There's a latch, it's for egress. So like at least one of those windows either has to have an egress latch on the bars or have no bars at all.
And I'm not sure he's up to fire code, though. I don't think that's his highest priority.
Well, you know, the house was, well, that's also a possibility. I loved the dog attack in the car scene. I thought that was really well done, the whole setup. And actually,
even when he's trapped in the trunk.
Yeah, like when she actually lures him into the trunk so she could trap him there. That whole woman versus dog in the car was really good.
Yeah.
Well, not only that, but I like that part. And I like the part where Alex uses he calls the dog down the hallway. Like the dog's going to get him and then he shuts the door on him. So there are a couple times where characters, they make some pretty smart decisions on how to get out of a jam with the dog in particular. So the liquid that covers up Cindy, you said that he was putting her in.
It's an oil furnace, and so it's the tank, the oil tank for the furnace. And so he dumped her in there. It was empty, and then he filled it up with oil.
Isn't that going to make your furnace smell pretty bad though after a while?
Well, I don't think
it smells like Cindy in here.
I don't think he was going to use it. It's probably an extra tank.
Yeah. Okay.
I thought it was a cooler, and I thought they're going to show. I was wondering if he was going to have another cooler type thing that they were going to show too. Like,
lots of bodies down there kind of thing.
Yeah. I was wondering if they're going to do that or not.
I kept thinking like, has he done this before? Like, are there others? Which is why, you know, again, when I saw that second body behind the washing machine, I was like, Jesus Christ, man, what are you doing?
Okay, and then my final question. So according to the trivia, when they asked Fed Alvarez what was in the turkey baster, he said the contents of the turkey baster are that he used were the same contents that are used in the X-rated film industry. So what does that mean?
Whatever they use.
Like, is it authentic?
No. They just use like, because I don't think your X-rated film industry is as authentic as you might think.
It's the same. I'll spend detailed hours doing some analysis and get back to you.
It's the same stuff that they used for money when he was in the bathroom. Yeah, I think there's, there is fake semen. It's called stunt semen. And I don't know what they put in there, like three parts Jergens, one part water. I don't know.
Well, can we actually talk about the gore and squeamish scale really quick? Because if I was going to say, what was the most squeamish moment of this movie, what would you say?
Turkey baster to the back of the throat.
There you go. Yeah.
That was a good one.
It is not in question in my mind. So, otherwise, from a gore scale, I mean, there's very little gore here. So, and this is sort of a 2 or 3 because I think what you see is more physical punishment than any kind of serious gore. It's definitely the whole concept of when he has her chained up and he's filling up the turkey baster and all that. The level of what's disturbing about the situation is high, but the actual gore in terms of what you see from a blood standpoint, I don't think it's very much at all. I mean, this is sort of a 2 out of 10 kind of thing.
I'm curious, was that the point when Jessamy bailed, or did she bail before that?
I think she bailed before that, actually. So
that's probably good.
Well, it's a good move.
Yeah.
Yeah. Gore factor, I gave it a 1. There is only one scene maybe with Money gets shot. There's actually even much blood at all. Like there's not much in the movie at all.
How about scares or tension? What did you think was the overall kind of scariest moment in the movie?
I'd just say when they're going through the house, like the scenes of like silence and it's dark and they're trying to be quiet. It's definitely the most tension and the most scariest.
Maybe like when Money's in the bedroom and all of a sudden, the blind man's seated up in bed because it was just sort of a creepy shot.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd say there was tension in the movie, but it was sort of like a low level of tension throughout. Nothing really got me except for like, maybe like Cindy, finding Cindy, like that right. That was a pretty good one. And the dog.
It had some good jump scare moments, so that was kind of fun. I do think that the most effective moment was, again, just kind of those moments where they're holding it on the blind man and he's just beating the shit because he just pummels Alex and he does the same thing to Rocky. Yeah. And both those times, I mean, you really feel those blows landing. So I think it's pretty, the violence is effective.
I think it's because like you were saying, but the way they shot it, but also because of the way they shot it, it looked like somebody really was beating up somebody else, right?
Right.
Where it's not all stylized and stuff. And that's impactful.
It is impactful. Yeah, it's impactful.
It's more effective, I think.
Yeah. After you see Alex and he's been beaten and you're looking at his face. And so the makeup effects, I think, are actually pretty well done in this movie.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, it's time to choose your death. And there aren't many of them in this film. There's 3, I believe. So how are you going out if you
I'll
have to go out?
I'll take the quick shot to the face like Cindy. She got dropped in a second.
But does that mean that you also had to take the previous 4 to 5 months of being chained up and having a turkey baster shoved inside you?
No.
Yeah, I think I'll take Money's death probably. Just shot through the head.
Yeah.
That's pretty quick. I guess he does get his throat kind of crunched a little bit, so maybe that's not that comfortable. But Colin, your choice.
I'm going to go Alex. Shot in the back. Didn't see it coming.
He got beat up a couple times.
Well, the question is, do you have to like take all the punishment beforehand, or is it just like the final coup de grace?
It's hard to say.
We get to make the rules, so why don't you make a decision?
I'd probably either say like just, shot in the head. I think both Money and Cindy got shot in the head. I don't know if I'd really like to get shot like in the face and bleeding out.
All right. Well, what did you guys learn from this movie?
By the way, I'd rather get shot with the Beretta than with the 44 Magnum or whatever it was.
Yeah, that looked like a big definitely. Gun. That's a big gun.
That I don't want to get shot in the face with that gun.
Are you getting shot to die? Because if so, I'll take the larger caliber.
Well, it's like this. Do you want like a small hole in the head or a big hole in the head? I'll take the small hole. As long as it happens like instantaneously, have my brain splattered against the back of the wall. No, thanks.
Okay.
That's just rude for whoever has to clean it up.
That's true. You need the blood Zamboni. From Dread, by the way. Check out our Dread podcast. It's a good one. Okay, well, what did you guys learn from this movie?
I learned that you probably don't want to do a home invasion if you're trying to impress a girl. It's probably not the way to go. But if you do choose to try and impress a girl is doing home invasions, bring some bolt cutters. Pick up a pair of bolt cutters. You can cut off locks. Make your job much easier.
Well, I mentioned this earlier, but I did note that if you are going to be conducting a home invasion robbery, it's a good thing to charge your cell phone before you get in there.
Yeah,
you don't want to be entering the building when you're down to 5 to 7% left on your phone. That just doesn't seem like a smart move.
Yeah, I think what I learned was just don't work with, you know, dumb, unpredictable risk takers like money. It's never going to end well.
Yeah, that is definitely a trope when it comes to these sort of heist movies where there's one guy that's causing some problems, and many times you want the character to get away from him.
Yeah.
Well, it's very much like reality, I think.
It's like Rounders.
Yeah. The Ed Norton.
Yeah. All right. So anything else you guys want to say about Don't Breathe?
I have a couple of questions.
Go for it.
His cryogenic sperm preservation system. You just order that on Amazon or what?
Yeah, and I don't know. Does he have a background in biology that allows him to know, like the proper cooling temperature for semen?
Yeah. And then, what was the storage capacity of that, and how long did it take him to fill it up?
Yeah. Also, what was he using, like a Coleman, like?
And you said he's 67, burner? Right? So
was he using like a burner just to heat it up? I feel like the defrosting process is pretty risky.
Yeah, I had a lot of questions about how the feasibility of this and how it would work out.
So you're really thinking about his semen a lot.
Well, I was also considering, like, how does he know if Rocky's ovulation cycle? Does he have to keep her in the wild? Does he have to try it a few times? Like, it's not like just a one shot done. Like,
I think
I think he was willing to go through the extra effort.
Yeah, I think it's a trial and error process. You know, you do it once. If she gets pregnant or she doesn't get pregnant, you do it again. Yep. Over and over
and based
over
on the load in that turkey baster, he was
the load.
he was what's funny about that is I meant that as the more general term as in the amount of something. Oh boy. Yeah, so he was not he was overcompensating for the variables, I think. So, all right, Marcus, what else you got? Questions?
I think that covers it.
All right. Well, I think I have a good sense about where we're going to end up in terms of a final recommendation or wrap up. But just how about just a general wrap from each of you guys, Marcus?
Yeah, I thought it was a really good movie. I'd probably give it an A, maybe an A minus, because it's not quite a horror movie. It's more of a thriller. Really good tension, really good suspense, but not much in the way of horror. Great movie, worth watching for sure. Great performances, great all around. It's shot well, it's written well, and I quite enjoyed it. So go watch it if you haven't seen it. Not quite a horror movie, but it's still really entertaining.
Colin.
What Marcus said, A minus, and it's just very entertaining. So there it is. Go watch it if you haven't seen it. It's a lot of fun, and it's not too scary, but it's got a good level of tension throughout, and really just well-made, well-thought-out movie.
Yep, I will say pretty much exactly the same thing and give it the same letter grade and give it an A-. I do really, there's a lot about this movie that I like. I think the photography in particular is just captivating when you're watching it, when they're gliding through the house. I think it's really effective. And I think that the performances, particularly Jane Levy and Stephen Lang, are just fantastic. Stephen Lang in particular is just, he creates, the blind man becomes somewhat of an iconic, you know, horror villain almost instantly. He's he has the look, he has the presence, he's just a total badass. And of course, what I really, really love about this movie is just the subversion, that you have a bunch of things that you think are going to happen and then it kind of flips it on your head. And that's so much fun because, you know, we've watched a lot of these movies and a lot of times you know exactly where it's going. So when you have one that legitimately keeps you off balance, goes in different directions, I just think it makes for a really fun, very fun viewing. And honestly, it totally held up on rewatch too, even though I knew some of the turns, just because I was able to enjoy kind of the entire structure of the movie. And I think, but last thing I'd say is I do think it's it's relatively smart for the way that it's written for what it is, because it does cover off on a lot of your questions. There's still, you know, I mean, I do think that there's still some fundamental overall overarching kind of logic problems probably, but just putting that aside, I think that it's a great movie, definitely worth watching. And Fede Alvarez is somebody who I will certainly seek out anything that he makes going forward, because I think it's great.
For sure. I look forward to the sequel this this summer.
Yeah, I definitely want to see the sequel. And I think you're totally right, Dave. It's sort of like the this is like the origination of like an iconic character. I could see this going on for sequel after sequel, where you're just like, oh, you know, there's, you know, there's Michael Myers, there's Freddy, there's the blind man, you know. It's just, it's a good, really good character. And I was expecting a good movie. I thought I knew what I was getting into in terms of the overall storyline. And I got that. And then it just, there was a big curveball, and there were a couple of big curveballs. So it was even better than I was expecting.
Yep. All right. So strong recommendation for all of us for Don't Breathe. All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed our very positive conversation about 2016's Don't Breathe. And we've all learned some lessons about that we're going to take into account when we do our next home invasion robbery. So we have some we have some things to think about in terms of our tactics. And with that, this is the Real DMC Podcast, signing off.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Arr, spoilers abound.
Okay, you win. You're doing the bumpers.